Hey everyone, this is Andy, better known as Love Retro BTW on Twitter, X, Threads, IG, and Cafe BTW on TikTok and YouTube. A quick update that the Cafe BTW podcast is taking a very long hiatus, but I still have something really amazing to share with you. We have a fantastic retro gaming community on Twitter X, where we've crossed well over 2,000 passionate members. And if you're a lover of retro gaming, this is the perfect place to share your content, showcase your pickups, or just chat about your favorite old school games. To dive into nostalgia and become a part of the thriving community, click in the show notes on the Cafe BTW link tree or go right to my Twitter X profile on Love Retro BTW. And now, without further ado, gear up for another sensational episode of the Gamers Week Podcast.
This time on Gamers Week Podcast.
You know, probably what this means is we talked a little bit last week about some Final Fantasy remakes, and this probably means that Square Enix might start to lean more heavily on those.
Yeah. Bring out Dirge of Cerberus again. Come on.
Remake Dirge of Cerberus, you cowards.
That's what we should do for Christmas, is make a Gamers Week mixtape of us singing all of these songs.
I thought Donnie was going to do some Peter Griffin thing for Christmas.
I forgot about that. Holy shit. You just file the receipts away and always remember them. Good Lord.
Excuse me, in episode 12.
It's such a burden. Trust me. Why do you think I drink so much?
To keep the voices.
Try to kill those brain cells. just
take a few off the top.
All right, I'll do five songs.
By the way, I'm ready.
All right. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 85, and today is Wednesday, August 9th, 2023. My name is Donnie G. Retro, and I will be your host this evening, but I am not alone. With me, as always, are my two lovely co-hosts. The first one is planning a new series called Two Ryans, One Cupcake.
We're workshopping that, okay? We're workshopping that.
We're spitballing ideas. And my second co-host chews more gum than Violet Beauregard at Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. Say hello to Writer's View, a.k.a. Blue Williams.
When I get that world record, you'll all be sorry.
Who's keeping track of those world records? Does Twin Galaxies have like a chewing gum world record thing?
I hope they don't check the tapes then.
Walter Day turns it up. Oh my God.
So let's jump right into our reviews, reactions, and requests. AGL2020 says, it's a really great show. I love the banter, format, and the way you approach breaking developments, news releases. A weekly listen for sure. Thank you, AGL.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sabatelli720 says, thank you guys for always being so generous and giving me something enjoyable to listen to. Can you feel the love tonight? And Emo-esque says, it was smart of you to put that banger of a theme at the start. You get 2 minutes out of me every week, much like my spouse.
Because 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
I hope we were going for a clean sweep, but Emo killed it.
Poor went out for Mrs. Emo.
Can we get a du-du-du-du-der?
How good.
And now it's time for the
It was right in everyone's face. Gamers Week just made it visible.
Come on, people, you gotta go home.
It was on the tip of everyone's tongue. Gamers Week just gave it a name.
Ah, yes. I know what this is.
Yes.
Every week, Blue gave the rules that Gamers Week decided.
Gentlemen, welcome to Very Important Poll Club. The first rule of Very Important Poll Club is you do not talk about Very Important Poll Club. The second rule of Very Important Poll Club is you do not talk about Very Important Poll Club. Third rule of Very Important Poll Club: someone quote tweets, answers on Discord, or complains that their answer isn't in the poll, their vote still counts. Fourth rule: only four choices to a poll. Fifth rule: one poll at a time, fellas. Yeah. Sixth rule: no white knights, no edgelords.
No edgelords.
Seventh rule: polls will go on as long as they have to. Well, not really. They go on for 24 hours. And the eighth and final rule: if this is your first night at Very Important Poll Club, you have to vote.
Yeah, baby.
Rules were meant to be broken, though.
Like, the very first part of it, I was just like, okay, like, I'm not sure what this is. And then, like, I heard a certain word. I was like, boom, fight club.
The tip of your tongue. Yeah, that's what put me right in it.
I'm actually pretty proud of that because I couldn't find a right AI voice to do Edward Norton. Mm-hmm. So I actually cloned his voice.
Wow.
How?
There's a thing online that says, would you like to clone a voice? Upload a couple of samples. So I was like, okay. I uploaded a couple of samples of him speaking from Fight Club. And they're like, here's Edward Norton's voice. I was like, what? Shit, it's Edward Norton's voice.
Man, no. Blue lives in the future.
I was like, oh, there's no way this could be misused.
Oh,
there it is.
Sudden realization moment.
All right. Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VAP. That is our very important poll. And if you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. So the question this week, if you had to vote for Game of the Year right now with only the titles that have been released so far in 2023, what would get your vote? Coming in third place, we have Star Wars Jedi Survivor with 9.7% of the vote. Second place was Diablo 4 with 10.2%. And the winner was Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom with 54.8% of the vote. Now, we also had 25.2% of people vote other. So let's look at some of the comments from the poll. Hadouk and Andy said Final Fantasy 16 and Street Fighter 6 are equal first for me at the moment with Theater Rhythm and Diablo as runners up. At number 83 said, Baldur's Gate 3, it's Elden Ring tier level. At Tetsu Hawk said, Hi-Fi Rush, the most original thing released this year, endless action. At Sonic the Werepog said, I'm going to say Pikmin 4. Tears of the Kingdom had so much hype behind it, but it ultimately wasn't my thing. But here comes Pikmin, all gas, no brakes, and steals my heart. Jedi Survivor was pretty great too, but it's one of those games you pop in and play every few years. And at GoldenEye 1971 said, I think Tears is a shoe-in for Game of the Year. However, I haven't played much of it. All I've been playing lately has been Redfall and McPixel 3, and I don't have high hopes for those. So out of the choices this week, what did you vote for, Ryan?
I'm going to go with Silks. Oh, sorry, forgot.
That's just mean. That is just plain mean and hurtful.
I love you.
Don't lie.
You tried to head her off of the past and crushed her dreams.
I did.
That's fine. I'm going to go sit in the corner and cry.
So I think I'm going to go with the consensus here, Tears of the Kingdom. That seems to be the most anticipated game. Probably when I log into Twitter to my Switch, at any given time, there is somebody playing this game. And even though I've heard a lot of interesting criticism about the game itself, it seems to have had such a huge impact on a lot of people, and people really, really enjoy it. From what I've been told, the story elements are very emotional. The gameplay is super fun and customizable as well. So I haven't played a lot of new stuff this year that I would consider to be a candidate for Game of the Year, but from everything that I'm hearing about Tears of the Kingdom, my guess is that one. So that's my prediction.
But it's not prediction. What would get your vote? You haven't played Tears of the Kingdom, unless I'm mistaken.
Right. But my guess is that A, Tears of the Kingdom is going to be nominated, and B, it would probably get my vote because I probably haven't played the other four that would get, or the other three that would get nominated at the same time.
So. Have you played a single new game this year?
No, probably not. Okay. No, I played Advance Wars.
That's not even a new game. It's a remake or remaster.
It's a remake. Remake's totally. Yeah, it's remaster, remake, somewhere around there.
Okay. Yeah. So no new games then?
No.
Okay. Okay. What about you, Donnie? You've played some new games this year.
I have played a few, a handful. As much as I want to go with Tears of the Kingdom, I don't know. I just have this feeling that it's not going to win Game of the Year simply because it took Breath of the Wild and kind of built off of that. So it built off of an existing game. And when that happens, I don't know if it's really, I don't know if it can really qualify as Game of the Year. I don't know. Just kind of the way I feel about that. I've played Street Fighter VI. I played Diablo IV. Both of them don't really feel like a Game of the Year type thing. Again, Street Fighter VI, there's nothing great and new about it. Diablo IV, nothing great and overly new about it. The one game that I'm looking forward to, however, is a game that hasn't even come out yet. It's Marvel's Spider-Man 2. And in this one, you get to see Venom. And everybody loves Venom. Anybody who's a comic book geek who doesn't love Venom, there's something very wrong with you. Jedi Survivor might even kind of get in there too, but I think Marvel Spider-Man might be a good lock for Game of the Year.
You know, that's interesting because your criteria of saying that they're just building off existing games, I mean, you do kind of have a point because these are all sequels or entries in a series. Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Diablo 4, Tears of the Kingdom, but then correct. You go ahead and list another sequel. Spider-Man 2, isn't that building off an existing game?
Well, I don't know. So, Tears of the Kingdom, you're using this. My argument's going to be invalid with this because
they're all going to say Call of Duty. Yes, Call of Duty.
No, because Call of Duty. Tears of the Kingdom is built on all of the existing stuff from Breath of the Wild. Now, one can say that, well, Spider-Man 2 is built on all of the existing things from the original Spider-Man because you have the same. It's set in a real life place, right? Whereas Tears of the Kingdom is set in Hyrule, fictional place, etc. They could have changed. I'm losing my argument here.
No, this is fascinating.
No, it's not, because I'm getting backed into a corner, and all of a sudden the bangs.
Donnie should write a book on how to lose an argument and back yourself into a corner.
How to lose an argument against yourself. Now that takes skill.
How to try and convince yourself that you're right, but you're wrong at the same time.
Available at all major bookstores.
And on Amazon. Blue, what about you? What's your choice for Game of the Year?
I voted Tears of the Kingdom. Obviously, I think I'm like 160 hours so far in that game. Still haven't finished it up because I moved on to Final Fantasy 16. So I need to go back and wrap it up. But I actually don't want it to win Game of the Year, even though I thought it was an amazing game and I loved it, because my pride comes first. And I did predict Starfield would win Game of the Year just this year. So that's what I need to win. So if you all could put Tears of the Kingdom a little further down in your voting hierarchy, do me a solid there. I'd appreciate it.
Can Starfield be postponed again until 2021? Please. And now let's take a look at our patron shoutouts.
Well, we couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. We have a new patron to announce. A big thank you and welcome to Doongi Forever. They will be joining Ducks in Disguise, Don't Make Me Pull Over This Car, Games with Coffee, Hybrid Divide, Meadow 1606, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, The Red Ox PDX Family, including Shannon and Luke, Shell Azeal, Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Boy, Span, Sassy Sony, Evo Lust, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Ryberize, Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gamatroid, Michael LeKite, Emo S, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, Fruitcakes Number One Stan, Ducks with Thick Thighs, Este Dione Malip, the Greek god Testicles. The other Greek god Testicles.
They're a pair.
Wizard, Zardoz, Bobson, Dugnut, Retro Blast, Pat, Great Saiyaman 81, BNC Zilla Guy, Geek With That, Johnny Boombots, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, and Terry Kinnear. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope that you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut. Patrons with benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
Is there an STD on my lip? Can you help me find this STD on my lip?
You really want to have the end sound 2 weeks in a row?
No. No.
No.
And now it's that time in the show where we take a look at our headlines. Our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they want to know, what's the first thing you remember burning to a CDR? Ooh. Send your answers to email at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes. That is going into the deep cuts of the brain.
Even I can't remember that far back.
No. You know, aside from downloading all the songs from Napster and LimeWire and all that stuff, I had the bright idea to take my existing CD collection and like copy it to a CDR and then sell the original disc and the case and just keep the CDR. I could make a little bit of money back on the money that I've spent for the CDs. Why are you chuckling?
I was just thinking, because Donnie's been buying stuff and then flipping it for longer than any of us. Yes.
since the 90s.
Every day I'm hustling.
All right, first up tonight from Engadget. The next Call of Duty game is Modern Warfare 3. Activision has confirmed longstanding rumors that this year's entry is Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 from Sledgehammer Games. The publisher also revealed that the latest game in the rebooted series will hit PC and consoles on November 10th. There aren't many other confirmed details yet beyond a teaser video. However, Activision recently implied that, for the first time, players will be able to carry over items like operators, weapons, and bundles from 1 year's Call of Duty game, in this case Modern Warfare 2, to the next. That was a pretty strong indication that the next entry would be Modern Warfare 3 and not, say, a return to World War II setting. At one point, it seemed like there wouldn't be an entirely new Call of Duty game this year. Reports in early 2022 suggested that Activision would slow things down a bit and instead deliver a significant expansion for Modern Warfare 2, while continuing to update Warzone and working on the next mainline game. Ultimately, the publisher decided to stick with its cadence of releasing a full-price Call of Duty game every year. In February, Bloomberg reported that Modern Warfare 3 was set to include maps and modes from last year's game while still feeling like a standalone full-price title. We'll learn just how Activision is making the transition into Modern Warfare 3 as it reveals more details in the coming weeks and months. Meanwhile, it's looking increasingly likely that Microsoft will close its pending $69 billion acquisition of Activision Blizzard very soon. If so, that could result in Modern Warfare 3 becoming the first Call of Duty title to hit Xbox Game Pass on its release day.
So, Donnie, You want to take this one?
You know what? Screw you. I'm tired of being stereotyped here. I'm so over this, man. I'm more than just Call of Duty, okay?
I get that.
Are you?
But you're the one with the most experience out of the three of us.
Are you?
Oh, God. And you're getting called out hard.
Getting Call of Duty'd out hard. I haven't played Warzone in about 2 weeks. It's not fun anymore. Activision has kind of lapsed on their whole banning cheaters thing. And it's no longer that fun. Even though, you know, occasionally I'll get in there with the guys and we'll make a Saturday night of it or whatever. But I no longer look forward to abandoning work and getting on Call of Duty every single day to play it.
That's saying a lot if you'd rather work.
I would. I'd rather work and study for this new certification I'm going through.
That's the most boring thing I've heard today.
But I'm glad to say that they're not returning to the World War II setting like they tried to do with Call of Duty Vanguard. People are so over that. It's been done to death. There's nothing more that you're going to be able to bleed out of that particular idea of World War II in a video game. Everybody and their mother created so many games in the 90s about World War II, in right. the 2000s, 2010s, and now they're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do that anymore. And I think they even tried to go back to World War I. Actually, yep. I could. So Vanguard might have been World War I. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. So if I misspoke, don't at me. But that kind of setting with those rudimentary guns, as opposed to the futuristic and more modern weapons that you have now, with all the recoil and stuff like that with the old guns, nobody wants that.
Doesn't pew pew like I want it to.
Exactly.
So online, I've been seeing some criticism that Modern Warfare 3, I mean, this article is describing it as a standalone, fully fledged title worthy of its own full price. But I've seen a lot of criticism online that it doesn't seem like it's anything more than just a big DLC pack to Modern Warfare 2.
I own Modern Warfare 2. I bought it whenever it launched. And what's going to be the difference between that and Modern Warfare 2? Just different maps? The way it looks? I'm sorry. If it's just, if you change the way it looks and it's not really that much of a difference, then just give me a map pack and be done with it.
Well, it kind of seems like maybe that's Activision's solution to them struggling to keep up with the annual releases is, well, instead of doing like completely brand new games, we'll just reboot the old ones.
It's a safe play though, right?
You're not wrong, because they know people will buy it.
Right.
You polish up the old stuff, you make it look dynamic and in the now, and people are going to go batshit crazy for it.
The only thing is, like, if you do that to a game like Final Fantasy VII, for example, you can really make some drastic changes, that, but still capture the essence of Final Fantasy. In Call of Duty, is there a big change between the old stuff and the new stuff from, like, a gameplay perspective? That would make this like a whole new fun experience in the old world? Or is this just like kind of what you already said, like a map upgrade, more or less? Just drop a few maps that are there, add a few extra weapons that were in the previous renditions that are no longer in this one. All I'm saying is I don't think Call of Duty necessarily is the type of IP that you're going to get a lot, like a whole lot of extra ooh or oomph out of.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
Is there a significant change? And the answer is there's not. There might be something with, like, oh, the way a kill streak is reformed or the way it looks, like when you're calling in a drone strike versus on Modern Warfare 2 versus Modern Warfare 3, might be a little bit more embellished or have a little bit more of a wow factor. But is that going to be significant enough to warrant that $69 price tag? And my answer 100% is no, it's not. It never will. Anything else you'd like to try and trip me up on with my words, Blue?
No.
The defense rests. All right, next up from VGC, Square Enix share price drops amid claims Final Fantasy 16 didn't meet high-end expectations. Square Enix share price in Japan has dropped by nearly 15% following the company's latest earnings release. Publisher reported its Q2 2023 earnings on Friday, during which it stated that the revenue had increased around 14% year over year, but profits had dropped about 65%. When the Tokyo Stock Exchange closed on Friday, Square Enix share price sat at 6,366 yen. When it opened earlier today, however, the price had dropped to 5,566 yen and stayed around that figure throughout the day, dropping to 5,457 yen at one point, the lowest the company's share price has been since May of 2022, and according to Bloomberg, its worst intraday drop in 3 years. Bloomberg also claims that one of the reasons for Square Enix's underwhelming financials is a launch of Final Fantasy 16. The publication cites three separate sources who attended Square Enix post-earnings call, all of whom claim President Takashi Kiryu said that the game's initial sales, in Bloomberg's words, did not meet the high end of the company's expectations. Kiru also reported that the slow adoption of the PS5 was also a limiting factor in Final Fantasy 16 sales, and that the end of the hardware shortages should open up opportunities to boost software sales. PS5 exclusive Final Fantasy 16 shipped and digitally sold 3 million copies within a week of its release in June. According to the publisher Square Enix, the figure means Final Fantasy 16's release sales were roughly in line with those of Final Fantasy Remake's launch, which managed around 3.5 million copies in 10 days. Albeit on PS4, which had a larger installed base. The last numbered installment, Final Fantasy 15, remains the series' fastest selling entry, with 5 million units shipped and sold digitally in its first 24 hours alone. This was across multiple platforms, however.
So it seems like the exclusivity gamble hasn't paid off for Final Fantasy as of late.
It's true, but one of the things that I find interesting about this is maybe this is an indication as well that people are getting a little tired of this too. I mean, we talked about Call of Duty being kind of a tired franchise. Is Final Fantasy a tired franchise at this point?
Well, that was actually the kind of the first thing I thought, is they're blaming the slow adoption of PS5, but as of April this year, there were 38.4 million PS5s. So that's enough to sell plenty copies of Final Fantasy 16 if people were interested in the game, which kind of leads one to believe that, yeah, maybe Final Fantasy just doesn't have the luster that it used to. I mean, I talked a little bit about that last week, my impressions of playing Final Fantasy 16 after 30 hours or so, and the TLDR in it is, it's okay, but it's not great. And it's really shallow compared to the kind of games that Square Enix used to put out. And the thing about 15 is that it was so anticipated because it took forever to come out.
Right.
So people were really, really looking forward to it, and everybody wanted to get their hands on it. 16, prior to the last year, maybe year and a half, I don't recall seeing much about it.
The only thing that I saw, the only trailer that I saw for Final Fantasy 16, didn't even look like a Final Fantasy game. Now, what would happen if they decided to take Final Fantasy and make it available for other platforms? Would it have been more successful?
My gut feeling is no. I mean, not significantly.
Yeah, because if you're truly a huge fan of Final Fantasy, you are on PlayStation 5. You're on PlayStation consoles in general. So, yeah.
So take a break. If you know, if you feel that it's just kind of watered down, you're doing the same stuff that just kind of feels flat and falls flat, take a break. Make it to where people actually want to be excited for it.
Final Fantasy 15 came out in 2016. So it's actually been 7 years between games.
Again, another argument proven invalid. Jesus.
I apologize. But I think a large part of the problem is, without Final Fantasy, if Square Enix were to admit that Final Fantasy is just not what it used to be and let's shelve it for a while and go on to something else, they don't have much else. Final Fantasy is their biggest IP, and without it, the company is in a lot of trouble.
Everybody's really anticipating Balan Wonderworld 2.
Right.
I mean, they could go the route of like Kingdom Hearts and make just like a bunch of crappy half sequels to that and games.
You're just being hurtful today. Unnecessary.
You know what I'm talking about. Come on.
Unnecessary.
But you're not disagreeing with me.
I'm just saying unnecessary. You know, probably what this means is, we talked a little bit last week about some Final Fantasy remakes, and this probably means that Square Enix might start to lean more heavily on those.
Yeah. Bring out Dirge of Cerberus again. Come on.
Remake Dirge of Cerberus, you cowards.
Can you imagine if they dropped that at like a PlayStation event? And you're like, wait, what?
I might buy it just because.
Right. It's the memest game out right. there. Right?
Next up from The Verge, Gizmodo editor-in-chief sues Apple over Tetris movie. Gizmodo editor-in-chief Daniel Ackerman has sued Apple and other parties over the 2023 Apple TV Plus film Tetris, alleging it rips off his 2016 book, The Tetris Effect. Ackerman claims Apple, Tetris rights holder The Tetris Company, the Tetris film's producers, and screenwriter Noah Pink copied the exact same feel, tone, approach, and scenes from The Tetris Effect, particularly its framing of the game's release as a Cold War spy thriller. Ackerman's lawsuit outlines a years-long correspondence with The Tetris Company as he wrote The Tetris Effect. He claims that The Tetris Company was aware of his work and threatened him with legal action for trying to pursue film and TV adaptations of his own book, only to draw heavily from his framing of the Tetris story. The film liberally borrowed numerous specific sections and events of the book, claims Ackerman. Apple and the Tetris Company did not immediately respond to requests for comment from The Verge. But Ackerman's case may be difficult given the fact that Tetris and the Tetris Effect both draw on real historical facts, which are not generally protected by copyright law. As a result, the suit relies heavily on arguing that Tetris copies the feel of the Tetris Effect. He also argues that some potential inventions of the film, like a guide who turns out to be a secret KGB agent, are based on speculations in his narrative. Authors have sued studios for developing semi-historical films based on their works. Warner Brothers and New Line Cinema settled a lawsuit over horror film The Conjuring in 2017, for instance. But that involved paranormal events whose historical accuracy is, to put it mildly, highly disputed, putting it closer to the territory of potentially copyrightable fiction. Ackerman says that he reached out after the Tetris trailer's release and unsuccessfully requested Apple and the other defendants address legal issues before the film's release. His suit alleges copyright infringement and unfair competition, among other offenses.
Jeez, The Verge, where was the spoiler warning on that one? You just gave away like the biggest plot twist of the entire movie.
Right, for everyone who didn't see it staring them in the face.
Which
who
I
knew
haven't?
She was a secret KGB
it
agent?
It was
oh
obvious.
My God.
Yes, yes. It was not subtle, but let's say that you just are one of those people that just can't detect subtlety in any measure. That might have hit you. That might have, oh my God, she's a KGB agent.
If you're spoiler one of those people, you probably have hit spoilers all the time. And you're used to it, so...
Just another day, another spoiler.
Yeah.
Imagine suing Tetris, the Tetris company, for ripping you off for something that they own. It's blowing my mind right now, just the thought of it. I know that somebody can create something original using somebody else's intellectual property, like an idea or something like that, a story, what have you. But this is kind of like freaking me out that this guy, he's suing them about Tetris.
I find it interesting. Guy writes a book, probably got permission from Tetris to do it, right? It says Tetris Effect yes. in the name, so clearly he had to, right?
It says Tetris Company was aware of his work. It didn't say that they agreed to his work or condoned it. And they threatened him with legal action for trying to pursue the film.
Right, for the film. But you would imagine that, is Tetris a word that's now not copyrighted? I would imagine it is. I've not read this book, but it sounds like it's a good book. So maybe I'd be willing to check it out. So maybe David's doing himself a favor and selling a lot more books by doing this.
Enough to pay for the lawsuit, though? That's a lot of books.
But I think it's interesting because if you watch the movie, it's not as historically accurate as, say, a documentary would be, where you can't claim copyright for somebody creating a documentary about the same topic that you've done before. But there is certain elements. I mean, if you're talking about plot points like the guide who becomes the KGB agent, if that's in both the book and the movie, they might have a case in that particular instance. But the burden of proof is on him to show that they willfully included that character. They were aware of his work and knowingly did so. One thing that he also has, though, that is in his corner is that he reached out to them when the trailer came out. So they were aware of it before its official release as well.
To contact the company after the trailer came out, I mean, at that point, it's way too late. To ask them to go to fix the legal issues before the film's release because the shooting is done. To have the actors come back, to go back to the locations, to reshoot things after you rewrote them, to make this nobody author, and I mean that with all due respect, to this nobody author happy. Of course they weren't going to do that.
But the problem is you run into it is if Ackerman could show that he was unaware of it before the trailer came out, then he has a case. But that's difficult to prove.
How can you
really
prove that, though?
Right, right. So that's going to be the interesting part.
Oh, I had no idea. I don't know.
The other piece to this, though, that also might play in his favor is that they limited his ability to make a movie out of it himself. So they're going to say, well, then you caused him undue harm because you limited his ability to take his own story and basically sell that off to a studio.
Well, it wasn't his story, though.
Well,
it was their story.
It was historically, you're right, all the historical pieces, but all the embellishments.
All right, fair. But it's like taking, do you know that movie Julie and Julia?
Yeah, with
yes.
What's her
name? Amy Adams.
Yep.
And
Glenn Close.
No. Julia Gulia.
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep. That's right. That's the one.
Right. Yep. So apparently Julia Child did not like that lady doing a blog of her recipes.
Interesting.
I think she died before Julia Child died before the movie came out, but it's a little like if Amy Adams' character, and I don't know the lady's real name, Julie, I guess, if she sued Julia Child for not letting her make a movie of the stuff that she wrote about Julia Child. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a good point. Just imagine Julia like, this bit.
Oh, that's perfect.
Now, if you notice the basting element that I'm using to bang her in the head, a slight whipping motion.
Just relax the wrist. And now let's take a look at our top three new releases for the week.
All right, first out is Gord, out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Gord is a single-player adventure strategy. To survive, you must build, but to prevail, you must conquer the darkness beyond the gates. In this dark fantasy world, you must complete quests while managing a populace whose personal stories and well-being decide the fate of your tribe. Please the gods with your prayers, and they may give you access to their spellcasting abilities. Incantations vary in nature. Some are offensive, while others are defensive, but they all help to tip the battlefield in your favor. Conceal areas from your enemies, gain control over threatening beasts, or turn an unholy rage against all who dare to oppose you. Next up is Stray Gods, the role-playing musical, out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Gods, romance, murder, musical numbers? Play as Grace in a world where Greek gods live in hiding among us. Change your fate as you draw friends, foes, and lovers into song, using your powers of musical persuasion to unravel the mystery of the last muse's death. Written by David Guider, Stray Gods is an urban fantasy tale of finding your place, taking charge of your fate, and discovering answers. Your choices will change the endings as well as the path you take to get there. And finally, Atlas Fallen, out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Rise from the dust and glide the sands of a timeless land filled with ancient dangers, mysteries, and fragments of the past. Hunt legendary monsters with powerful sand-infused weapons and abilities in spectacular superpowered combat. Unleash your power to create deadly shape-shifting weapons. Target and gather the essence of your enemies to shape your own custom playstyle, forging a new era for humanity in a fully cooperative or solo story campaign. So based on these games for this week, what are you in for, Donnie?
So immediately out on Gord. It's a strategy game. I'm not into those types of games. Atlas Fallen looks like a mashup of Devil May Cry and God of War in a desert setting, and it looks like every other God of War game, the whole mashing the buttons and doing the combos to the thing that you're killing. It's which leads me to Stray Gods, a role-playing musical. Initially, you would have lost me at the term musical. I am not a musical person.
You sing all the time.
You're not wrong. I do find myself singing, but I don't feel like these songs are representative of the moment of my life that's going on. You know, it's not like a La La Land where I'm sitting there walking down the street and hearing a piano play and have to stop in, and then all of a sudden there's this musical number. Watching the trailer for it, I don't know exactly how the gameplay will pan out, but I think it might be worth at least trying. Because there's a little bit of a choose your own adventure type aspect of it, where you can pick your responses and certain things happen. And I do kind of like those. But the color palette, the visuals on this one look a little bit more up my alley. So I think I might try Stray Gods, the role-playing musical, TM.
Okay. Did not see that coming. What about you, Ryan?
I was going to say, if I had to bet, I would have lost this one. Would have had the bookie coming after me. Right. So I will start with Atlas Fallen by quoting Anakin Skywalker by saying, "I don't like sand. It's coarse and rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere." I share the same sentiment as Donnie. It feels a little old hat, where we're kind of bringing the same tropes into something new. I mean, it might be interesting, but nothing jumps out of me right away as being captivating. Stray Gods, the role-playing musical, to add role-playing musical is like the video game equivalent of saying, "Hey, we're going to get pizza with anchovies." So
don't knock them. I know.
Oh, I've tried it. Trust me. So yeah, I'm not into this. And I used to do show choir and stuff. I used to sing in musical.
That's right.
Yeah. And I don't want to play video games. Like,
why not? It's right up your alley.
No.
Right in your wheelhouse, as the saying goes.
Well, nice. And you know what? It's not like Rock Band musical or anything, right? So I'm not giving a mic and hanging ass to sing some show tunes. But this is just a strange game. I'm looking forward, though, to checking it out on Twitch, watching people play this and just seeing what it's actually about. So that'll be interested to watch, but I won't purchase it. Which brings us to Gord. Gord reminds me a lot of like Warcraft 1-3, and especially the lighting. The lighting is really low. It has that kind of like Viking-esque feel to it, especially with some of the buildings and stuff. So I would be very interested in just at least giving this a try. And see where it goes. The description, though, is really, really benign. Some offensive, while others are defensive spells. Like, like no crap, like every other game out there.
Yeah, you should never judge a game solely based on its Steam description.
Agreed.
Definitely not.
I would buy nothing. But this is the one that probably piques my interest the most, so I will go with Gord.
All right.
Blue, what about you?
Well, I don't normally go for survival games, so probably I wouldn't play Gord. The one thing that kind of has my curiosity piqued is that it's rated 18. So There must be something fairly hardcore in there.
Werebear sex scene.
One can hope. Maybe it would be a more mature story or something like that that would cause me to be interested in it when I otherwise wouldn't be. But for now, I would probably skip it. Stray Gods, the role-playing musical. I love that title, and I don't want to play the game. But I love that title. Atlas Fallen looks like Monster Hunter in the desert.
Right.
As an action game, it is closest to what I usually play. So by default, I will choose Atlas Fallen. But I will agree with you guys in that it kind of looks like a lot of other action games. It doesn't really look that special or unique. But as far as these three choices this week, it wins by default.
Ooh, what are we drinking?
Pamplemousse liqueur.
Ah, pamplemousse. I've had that one. It's pretty good.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
Hearing Donnie say, pamplemousse liqueur.
Pamplemousse liqueur, huh? All right, where were we?
Main topic, introduction.
Okay. And now it's that part of the show where we discuss our main topic.
All right, from Forbes, everyone's mad about Rockstar's secret Red Dead Redemption project reveal. Rockstar fans have been excited about a new announcement in the Red Dead universe that was teased a little while ago, and now the end result has been revealed. The project is a port of Red Dead Redemption for the Nintendo Switch and PS4/PS5. Not a remaster, not a remake, a literal port. And it's not even being done by Rockstar. It's being done by Double 11 Studios. Fans are concerned that the last time something like this was outsourced, it resulted in the disastrous GTA 5 Definitive Edition launch. The port also cost $50. Very high for a 13-year-old game that is apparently not getting any significant updates at all with the release. Just the ability to run on these platforms, and while not doing any upgrades, may make more sense with Switch and PS4, the game does have a dedicated PS5 version. Obviously, the console would be capable of dramatic improvements to the original game if those were actually developed. The port, out October 13th, changes nothing about the game.
Although it does have Undead Nightmare, there are no 4K or 60 frames per second modes, not even on PS5. PS4 and Switch versions will also not have multiplayer support. Weirdly, it seems like the best way to play Red Dead Redemption on modern hardware is through Xbox One Series X and S backwards compatibility. One of the reasons? Well, you don't have to rebuy it for $50 for starters. After today's Take-Two earnings call, IGN asked CEO Strauss Zelnick why they priced the newly announced port the way they did, especially given the backwards compatibility situation for Xbox. "That's just what we believe is the commercially accurate price for it," Zelnick responded. When asked if Undead Nightmare was the reason for its $50 price, Zelnick said the add-on was a great standalone game in its own right when it was originally released, so we feel like it's a great bundle for the first time, and certainly a great value for customers.
Reportedly, an actual full remaster of Red Dead Redemption was killed because of the 2021 GTA Definitive Edition disaster. But Rockstar appears to be trying to have things both ways, releasing the game for newer hardware while putting far less work into doing so, while charging close to as much as the original game cost in the first place. The reveals have seen their YouTube trailer debuts underwater with likes/dislikes. Everyone was hoping for something far more significant from the franchise besides a port. The ultimate future of Red Dead as a series remains unclear, as Rockstar is about to go heads down into full GTA 6 mode. While Red Dead Redemption 2 was made during GTA 5's dominance, it remains to be seen if they'll do that again with the same franchisee, and it feels unlikely that they will. But as ever, Rockstar is sharing almost nothing about their plans until they're close to actually manifesting.
Can I just say, the phrase commercially accurate is corporate speak for, we right? know you f***ers are going to pay this much.
Exactly.
That's the most non-answer ever.
So I have a vision, right? They put this game out. Nobody buys it. They cut costs, lay off staff, saying, well, we had to because of this commercial failure and yada, yada, yada. Oh, where do I collect my bonus check?
Yeah, I'll get my golden parachute on the way out.
Pretty much.
Right.
This just sounds like if you say moved from one company to another and they were going and then you were expected to present on something at the last minute, you totally forgot about it. So you go back to your old laptop, email it to yourself, and then you go, hey, look at this. I made this. I'm such a genius kind of feel. This is so mailed in for me that I can't believe that. They would have the audacity to be able to tease this, by the way, prior to it releasing, and then be like, hey, it's the same game.
The fact that they're literally saying it's a port. There's nothing's changing. You're not going to get multiplayer support. You're not going to get the high resolution that you want. It's just going to be a port.
Right. If you were going to do this, you would ideally, you would just be like, announce it as a day one release, right? Like all of a sudden it's just, okay, now it's available, go buy it. You know, rather than having a teaser and then having a reveal.
Well, you gotta get that internet hype, right? That buzz.
Like Nintendo does that all the time, right? Where they do like a Nintendo Direct and they're like, hey, by the way, this game is now available. Like that would have been a much better way, I think.
Yes.
And if you want to know where that $50 is going for that port with no improvements, it came out earlier this month that Take-Two reported the compensation it actually paid Zelnick in fiscal 2023 was $42.1 million, more than 2.5 times the previous year's amount. So this is where he's making the big bucks to put out statements like...
commercially accurate.
Commercially accurate price.
I'm going to use that from now on. That's commercially accurate.
The name Strauss Zelnick sounds douchey, and now to find out that he actually is just like, if you were to make a book and name one of your characters Strauss Zelnick, like, you would know right away.
My name is Strauss. I drive the BMW and get to Vegas. What are you doing?
He wouldn't be the bad guy, but you would get a lot of laughs at his expense.
Exactly.
But, you know, I'm actually really looking forward to the release of this because the GTA Definitive Edition, it was so bad that it was good for weeks and weeks worth of memes online.
So you're in it for the memes.
Yeah, she's not in it to play this thing.
I don't care about Red Dead. I'm in it for the memes.
That's what we should really start judging things on more of now. It's like, what is their meme return on investment?
The meme ROI.
Yeah.
The is quite high. In this. We're expecting a meme ROI of 2.4.
So what was Golem's?
Oh, man. 10.
Yeah, that when we're getting the quarterly financials, that was what we should actually be reporting on.
God bless the internet. Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, the reason that this didn't get made into a remake is because they made a mistake with the definitive version and then just copied their homework and did it again for this one. And they're expecting people to pay $50 for this. This is, isn't that old saying, like, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results is the definition of insanity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rockstar, you used to be so good.
Yeah. So did CD Projekt Red. So did Square Enix. So did Ubisoft. I think there's a pattern here, but I could be wrong.
They're going to hope that the wool is pulled over people's eyes, that they don't remember that Grand Theft Auto launch. And they're like, oh, look, Red Dead Redemption. Okay, like I can actually play. You mean I don't have to hook up my old console to play? Okay, I'll $50. That's not too bad. Like, wow, this is just the same. I could have just exerted a little bit of physical effort and grabbed the old game and put it up, hooked up a couple of wires and whatever.
See, and I've been trying to find, because remember a couple weeks ago when we talked about the study that was done that said 80% of video games released in the last 40 years are commercially unavailable?
Right.
Yes.
And the article that we discussed talked about ports aren't necessarily always feasible because they cost so much. And I was trying to find that article so I could find out what they said was the cost of a port. And I can't find that one, but I found a different one that said...
But I'm glad you keep receipts like this, because I don't remember the stuff that we discussed on previous episodes.
It says the short answer is that it costs in the mid to upper five figures for a straightforward project, single platform, or to the low seven figures for a multi-platform AAA.
So they're charging $50 for this.
Right. So I was trying to be like, if there's any merit to this price, maybe it's because of the cost of the port. But I think if they can afford to pay Strauss $42 million, they can probably afford a upper five figures port.
Right. You have to think that the amount that they're going to get back by spending five figures to port the game, $50 a pop, and let's just say, I don't know, 50,000 people, if it's a complete dud and 50,000 people buy it, that's $2.5 million. So
I was to say, if you need to hit $7.5 million, you would need to sell 150,000 copies of this.
That's nothing.
No, it's not.
But that's at assuming that they make $50 off of every single one of the sales of these games, which they definitely don't.
Okay, so double it.
Yeah,
and
it's 300,000. That's really, yeah, now that you mention it, that maybe that's not that much. But no. Add on top of it the $42 million that Strauss is making.
That's free money, because people will buy it, man.
his commercially available bonus project.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the simple answer is, if you think this is unfair, then just don't buy it.
Of course.
No, I think, in fact, I think this is something as gamers, we can kind of have some solidarity by saying, don't buy this because it's clearly a company that's just mailing it in.
Right. And I guess on the one hand, you could kind of give them some credit for thinking that their old IPs are not dead, like they are worth something, but apparently they're not worth enough effort to do properly.
Is their mentality or their thought process with this, well, people don't, they might not have their old Xbox 360s to really play this game, so ease of access, drop us $50 and play it right here.
But it's backwards compatible with the Series X and S. So all you would have to do is buy a used copy, technically, right?
Right.
Which, let's look up used copies on Pro Shining. Okay. It's a little on the pricey side. A complete copy is $7.50.
Oh, I can't. Yeah, too much.
A new sealed copy is $33, so even less.
Oh, I'm going to be a big spender here. Get the brand new one.
And if you just want it to sit on your shelf, a graded copy is $110.
Okay, so it is a fully backwards compatible game.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, that's the nail in the coffin.
All right, so before we jump into Gaming History 101, we wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you to everyone who attended the Splatoon 3 tournament on Saturday, August 5th. Big congratulations to Tentacle Difficulties, which I think is an amazing pun, for winning the tournament. And most importantly, we raised over $700 for Stand Up to Cancer. So thank you to everyone who supported the show and showed their generosity.
You know, I don't think you guys actually said the name correctly, Tentacle Difficulties, once. That whole string.
Oh, it's like a tongue twister because you know that there's another word that you want to say, and it's like trying to find its way out. You know what that word is? I'm not going to say. It's a redacted or Yoshi sound moment.
Redacted.
They're always trying to find their way out.
But what's coming up next for Stand Up to Cancer?
That's right. On August 26th, Davey and Dux from the Finer Things are going to be hosting a Mario Kart 8 tournament. Blue is actually defending her crown on this one. So I wish you nothing but the worst of luck.
And that is consistent with everything you've said to me today. Hurtful.
I like to be predictable. All right, thank you for coming, student. Please take your seats. Welcome back to Professor Rybrandt's Gaming History 101. And in today's lesson, we'll talk about one of the most influential lawsuits about the idea of freedom of speech and expression when it comes to video games.
You mean Daniel Ackerman versus Apple and the Tetris Company?
Man, I'm very topical here today. So most of the time I do cover things that happened more than 20 years ago, but this lawsuit is in its final decision was actually penned in 2011 in a case called Brown versus Entertainment Merchants Association. This is going to be potentially uncomfortable for some folks, so I do apologize. I do talk about a little bit about violence in this one, so if you're not in the headspace to listen to that, I certainly understand if you skip forward here on today's conversation. So just wanted to give you guys a heads up. Back in 2005, it had been 6 years since the Columbine Massacre in a high school in Colorado, in which Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold murdered 13 students and staff and injured more than 20 others. Much of their heinous act was blamed on the fact that the two of them happened to regularly play violent video games. And as often happens, people were looking for something to blame, and violence in video games seemed like an easy target. Now, with the rise of the first-person shooter genre, games like Grand Theft Auto, you know, new Mortal Kombat games, as well as Manhunt depicting near-life extreme violence, legislators saw the opportunity to limit who has access to these games, which is something we're actually still talking about today. But proposed in California by state legislator Leland Yee and penned into law on October of 2005 by Governor Schwarzenegger, was the California Violent Video Games Law, aimed at restricting the sale or rental of games that contain certain content to persons under the age of 18. The restriction included killing, maiming, and dismembering or sexually assaulting the image of human beings that a reasonable person would find the games deviant or of morbid interest to minors, offensive to community standards and what is appropriate to minors, and cause a game to lack any serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific values to minors.
Huh.
There's a lot of terms in there.
Right.
There are.
And by that definition, like bubble bobble, I think counts.
I mean, a reasonable person can see that bubble bobble is obviously not suitable for children.
It's suitable for anybody.
Now, the legal showdown in the United States District Court of the Northern District of California, where Judge Ronald White presided over the case, and he listened carefully to both sides of the argument and ultimately ruled in the favor of the video games industry. Now, Judge White concluded that California's law infringed upon the First Amendment by attempting to regulate the content of video games based on their depiction of violence. Due to the court's ruling, the law didn't go into effect in California. Now, unsatisfied with the district's ruling, the state of California took the case to United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. In February of 2009, a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit upheld the lower court's decision, declaring that California's violent video games law was unconstitutional. A panel believed that the law lacked necessary precision to achieve its intended goal of protecting minors from violent video game content. Not willing to back down, California decided to appeal once more, and this time to the highest court in the land, the United States Supreme Court. Now, the video game industry braced itself for what would be a momentous showdown before the nine justices. Supreme Court heard oral arguments on November 2nd, 2010, and the nation watched eagerly as the fate of video game regulation hung in the balance in a landmark decision delivered on June 27th, 2011.
Oral.
What?
Oral. Sorry.
Well, thank you for that.
Juvenile.
So the court ruled in 7-2 favor for the video game industry, with the conservative Justice Clarence Thomas and liberal Justice Stephen Breyer dissenting. I always thought that was interesting with this one because it didn't go down party lines, because both dissenting justices were from a different party and they had actually different arguments for why they dissented. But you know, penning the majority opinion, Justice Anton Scalia asserted that video games deserve the same constitutional protection as other forms of media. He defended the video game industry's rights, declaring that the government could not restrict the content of speech based on its violent nature. Interactivity, Scalia argued, did not differentiate video games from other protected forms of expression. Now, the court's decision was a moment of triumph for the video game industry, solidifying its status as protected form of free speech. It meant that developers and publishers could continue to create and distribute video games without undue government interference, regardless of their content. However, there were dissenting voices from the courts. Justice Thomas, in this dissenting opinion, argued that the founding fathers did not intend to protect minors' access to violent speech. He contended that the states should have the authority to regulate the sale of violent video games to minors, even if it meant restricting certain free speech rights. Justin Breyer, too, dissented, expressing concerns about the potential psychological harm caused to minors by violent video games. This assertion was addressed in Scalia's opinion, saying that studies used in the arguments were not convincing and showed no stronger influence than any other type of media, including books, which is he referenced old fairy tales from the Brothers Grimm, specifically Hansel and Gretel, who shove a witch into an oven, and cartoons like Looney Tunes, where guns and other weapons are used to maim characters on screen. So that's right. Looney Tunes apparently
comes to the rescue.
Right, exactly. Like now, despite the dissenting opinions, the video game industry emerged victorious, emboldened by the Supreme Court recognition of its right as protected speech. The ruling became a pivotal moment in video game history, solidifying the industry's standing and paving the way for continued innovation and creativity. And so, the video game industry forged ahead, forever empowered by the notion that video games were not mere entertainment, but a powerful form of expression and a narrative shaped by constitutionally protected pursuit of creative freedom. So to me, this is actually a pretty landmark case. We've talked about copyrights infringement. We've talked about a lot of different video game lawsuits that have happened over time. But I think this one has such a large, far-reaching impact when it comes to video games. Now, granted, am I the person who's like advocating that minors need to see all these things that we named in that like long description? No. But what I'm saying is that restricting people from the right to access it should be something that parents decide, not the state, at least in my opinion. And the opinion of 7 out of 9 judges.
Well, in argument to that.
Oh, well, this is going to be a lawyerly thing. Okay.
So you have employees, right, that say at movie theaters and at stores, like, okay, well, this is rated R, mm-hmm. or this is even rated X. I'm sorry, you can't purchase this because you're not old enough. That's the same thing with video games that they do all the time. Like, this has an ESRB rating of this. I can't sell you this game, or you can't rent this game, bygone era, because you're not old enough.
And that, you're right. That is true. But those are policies of those companies, where this is law. That means anyone caught doing that could be criminally liable
for it. That's, yeah, okay.
Which I totally get, because I was actually thinking that too as we were going through this. And then I was watching a few videos on it. And I was like, that makes more sense. So it's the same experience as if you went to your local Blockbuster and...
My what?
Your local Blockbuster back in the day. Sorry, I didn't say back in the day. I thought that was inferred. And you walking in with your kids and you wanting to buy the movie Aliens and then being like, oh, well, you have 2 kids. Sorry, can't do it.
No, that's.
I mean, sort of. The question is, did you want video games to become a controlled substance on par with like alcohol and cigarettes?
Right.
Nobody wants that. But at the same time, I see kids in our local liquor store all the time.
So to that point, or at least to that end, is the kids are still going to find it. They're still going to consume it. But if that's true, then do we really need legislation on it?
I think the point is that when government starts trying to force morality on the populace, that's a problem.
Right.
John Spartan, you have been fined 1 credit for violation of the morality code.
They'll never make me use the 3 seashells. I don't care. Never going there. I will invest in a bidet, though. All right. Yes. So thank you for attending today's Gaming History 101. Just a reminder, if you have ideas for a story you'd like to hear, send us a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com, and we might feature your suggestion.
All right. Thanks, Professor. Let's go ahead and wrap up this episode. Thank you for listening to episode 85 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast and Love Retro BTW for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. Or join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice.
So when you said professor, it made me think, the Professor and Marianne here on Gilligan's Island. So if I'm the professor, are you Gilligan, Mr. Moneybags?
You are.
Gilligan? Or the skipper. Which one are you? Because if I'm the professor, you are...
I'm Marianne.
I was going to say, you can't do that because, you know, I would say Ginger's too on the nose for Blue. So I was going to argue she was going to be Marianne, but hey.
She can be Gilligan. It's a role reversal.
She's and in Gilligan. This day
and
age,
yeah, she can be Gilligan and I'll be Ginger.
I can pull off that hat. I can do it.
There's only been one time I've worn a bucket hat and it's just, it didn't sit well.
Well, now that we've given everyone something to think about, have a good night.
Yeah, there's going to be some weird fan fiction on the internet now.
If you want to see a picture of me wearing this bucket hat, subscribe to our Patreon and be a member of our Patreon-only Discord.
Is that a real promise? Are you really going to?
Yeah, I'll put it up there.
Sweet.
For the one person who joins to see it.
Well, we got 20 new patrons this month.
Man, they all canceled. All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
This is Artificial Intelligence Edward Norton. Subscribe to Gamers Week podcast, or else the machines will have won.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like,
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.